Welcome to the Dadpreneur Podcast, where we celebrate the journey of parenthood and navigating the exciting world of business while raising a family. I'm your host, Alex, and today I have the very special guest joining us, Dr. Allison Escalante. Dr. Escalante is a pediatrician, author, TEDx speaker, and really a woman on a mission to ease the epidemic of anxiety in our society. She's also here to share her insights from her book, Start, How to Be a Parent Your Child Needs in the World That Won't Stop Pushing. And Dr. Escalante is also going to discuss her unique approach to mindful parenting in the midst of our high-pressure world. I watched your TED Talk, Dr. Escalante, and I loved it. I loved it all. We're going to talk about it on the podcast today. So without further ado, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, let's get right into it, Dr. Escalante. You've developed a fascinating three-step method called Start. And it basically is designed to help parents raise their kids mindfully and enjoyably. Could you tell us more about what inspired you to create this method?
You know, early on in my career as a pediatrician, my older partners would walk around the hall shaking their heads saying, man, the parental anxiety gets worse every year. And, it was interesting how many visits I'd been trained to do physical health. And yet so many visits, really, the core to them was actually that anxiety. Is my child okay? I read that you're supposed to do this, this, and this. And I feel like, and I read that his development is off because I read this thing. And, you know, if I let him cry, will it damage him? And I'm failing to breastfeed, but I'm going to flagellate myself and ruin my own health in order to make sure I breastfeed because my child will be damaged for life if I don't. And, you know, I'm hearing all of this and I'm thinking, wow. This is really a challenge because it's not just about medical advice here. It's about this air of stress that was distracting parents from the kids often right in their lap.
That makes sense. Absolutely. And I can, as a parent, I've talked about our struggles here and the show in the past. And to your point, Dr. Escalante, I mean, you know, you have family, neighbors, all the different people in our world who might say, well, wait, your child is 7 years old and they're still riding with wheels on their bike, or maybe they're not an, you know, experienced swimmer. They're not Michael Phelps yet. How come, you know, they should be doing that at the age of one. So it's kind of crazy, but one concept that or term I was not familiar with after watching your TED Talk, which I really loved, was you mentioned the concept of a should storm, which resonates with a lot of parents who are feeling overwhelmed by all of society's expectations. So how does your method help parents navigate this should storm and then find their confidence?
Well, that's right. The should storm is a term I coined to describe this parenting culture that we're in, because I concluded that the problem was not that every parent in America had suddenly developed an anxiety disorder. Mm-hmm. The problem was being driven by this culture that criticizes us, that pushes perfectionistic parenting, that tells us you should do this, you should do that, you should never do that other thing, and you're likely messing up every step of the way. And that's what I call the should storm. And the double entendre is intentional because it really does feel like we're being like bombarded by a whole bunch of crapola, you know? Yeah. And if you think it's bad when the kids are young and seven, you should see what happens when they hit high school, like my older son is. And suddenly the pressure on how to prepare for college starts. It's amazing. How do we then find a way to meaningfully connect with our kids and enjoy them in the middle of all of this? Mm-hmm. It wasn't enough to just point it out. Other books have done that. It was about finding a solution that would help parents be the parent that they wanted to be, which is a parent that meets our kids' genuine needs. And to do that, we needed a way to tune out that should storm.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I was recently talking to a client who runs a nonprofit for children on the spectrum. So autistic, and they work with many others as well. But she was just saying, you know, like how many people are not aware of, you know, the challenges of parenting when you have an autistic child. And we were talking about the different schools that she works with. And then I mentioned a podcast that I listened to. Is a husband and wife who, you know, they've been talking about their journey with an autistic child. And something kind of hit a string with me, which was they said, you know, there's a lot of material out there, information resources that talk, that tell you what to do, tell you what to do, but they don't tell you really how to do it and take you down that journey. And so anyways, I was sharing with her that that podcast, because I feel like in the world of content and internet, social media, gaming, like YouTube, which not just for us adults, but of course for our children as well, there's just a lot of stuff that doesn't have enough substance. And I found that with your body of work and what you've done is give more of that, really the how, but then teach it through the examples. And I think your background in pediatric medicine obviously gave you that a different perspective than if you were just doing the psychological sort of approach, which I know you also write on Psychology Today, right?
I do. And I'm also the parenting contributor for Forbes as well. But being a pediatrician is all about finding what actually works in the real world for people with actual lives. And so because of that, there's so much parenting advice out there. Some is great, but it's a lot. And I could never remember it under the pressure of the moment. And I certainly couldn't expect, my time restrained parents who were so busy trying to take care of their kids to read three books on parenting and then distill it out for themselves. Right. And then some of it is not great, and it's really unproductive advice. But I really appreciate the way you identified that about the how, because one of the other aspects of being a pediatrician is I've been honored in my career to work with people from all walks of life and from so many different countries and cultures in the world. And it's humbling. And so, you know, there really runs a risk when you write a parenting book that you're going to be basically, there's a real tendency to write from your own cultural background and to write a lot of like, hey, do it this way because it worked for me. Right. And there are so many meaningful and valid approaches to raising children in the world. And every family is a little different. Every child is different. And every match between child and parent is different, right? Like your personality versus their personality. So one size fits all is not always helpful. And that's why, you know, I created SciCStart, because it is both a what and a how. And it really focuses on changing our approach to our children at a fundamental level so that it's not driven by the should storm anymore. And so that we can actually gain real skills that we build ourselves.
I love it. And, you know, I keep going back to the should storm, because anyone who hasn't watched your TED talk, they will after they listen to our show here. But I just love the wordplay there with, you know, you having a should storm all the time. And I'll tell you the truth, you know, doing this podcast over the past, you know, 4 years. And then as I was discussing with you, Dr. Escalante, before the podcast, our journey into homeschooling, we're on year number six for all our four children. One of the things that it did for us is really decrease the level of shoulds so much that I can't even explain how little I care. But I think what it did for our listeners and the content I write from a parent's perspective, not just a dad, I typically do this with my wife and we'll write some content, is what you said, which is not writing just from my everyday experience with my very unique child. We all have unique kids. We're all unique parents. I learned in this process, these last 6 years of homeschooling and nearly 5 years of podcasting, that, you know, I used to more tell people like what they should do. So I guess I was doing a should storm too. And I've come full circle to, hey, listen, this is just my life, my lived experience. Here's, you know, what happened, or I bring someone like yourself. Here's what Dr. Escalante is doing. Maybe how you're going to do it. Give it real stories, tell real stories. And I think that that overall has helped quite a few people.
It's about sharing that experience and then letting people take from it what they will, you know, and I think that's very consistent with SciSee Start. So how does it work? Well, basically every time we feel a should or we feel unsure, sigh, take a deep breath into your belly and let it go long and slow. A lot of people will say to me, oh yeah, I've read, you know, about breathing techniques. Like I know box breathing or I know this. And I say, great. Mm-hmm. If you remember to do it, that's fantastic. Right. But sigh is the only breathing technique that is biologically built in. We do it automatically. And that's why it's important, because in our busy lives as parents and sometimes very stressed out, we need something that fits naturally into our workflow with our kids. So sighing, it's critical that you focus on the out-breath. It's the long, slow out-breath that sends a message to the nervous system that you are safe and it's okay to connect. And that is critical when we're moving out of the should storm. The should storm makes us feel like we're under threat. So we react with anxiety or that fight or flight response in our body. Or if we're too badly shoulded on, we may respond with the other defense mechanism in the nervous system, which is the shutdown response. Sometimes people have heard of the freeze or faint response. We get that heavy feeling. We're like, oh my gosh, they're just too much, these kids. And we just feel like we just don't want to move. Both of those are self-protection responses to a sense of being overwhelmed. And we need to move out of them in order to be wise parents, because when we're in fight or flight or where we're in freeze or faint, mm-hmm. guess what part of our brain is shut off? The part that does the clear, good, wise, critical thinking. The thinking part of our brain is shut off.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I mean, one thing that I found, and again, you know, I'm not like a extreme meditator. I meditate daily, but my meditations can last from, you know, literally 5 minutes to, we do it with the kids as well. And we find that those breathing techniques work well. But actually this happened yesterday, Dr. Escalante. I was in the middle of not a should storm, but just a storm in general. A lot of things that you know, putting out fires.
Right.
Okay, great. And I go in the kitchen and one of my kids dropped a glass and just, it broke all over the place. And to your point, at that moment, of course, I could have a negative reaction, or I could take that deep breath and just say, I got it. It's cool. Because the fact is that my anxiety, which was caused by something totally different, I understood at that moment that this had nothing to do with the glass, you know, breaking. Right. But I had to take a step back and say, it's okay. And then, you know, go grab a cup of tea. I have like sort of like routines, do a quick meditation, and then reset my day, because there was just way too many things that were blowing up right there. So I love that technique that you mentioned. What other practical tips from your method do you think that parents can implement in their daily lives?
Well, first off, I just have to respond to what you said there about meditating in the middle of the day after your kid broke a glass. That's fantastic. And I love it that you have a family life and a work life that you can do that. That's wonderful. I always tell parents, if you have time to meditate, that's great. And even if you only meditate once a month, it has benefits. However, with certain kinds of jobs or certain kinds of family life, there's no time.
That's right.
And I've had years where it was, you know, because I'm a meditator myself, but like as a working doctor who's on call and I'm changing the baby's diaper while a parent is calling me about their sick kid, right? And like,
yes.
There's no time, not even like there's no bandwidth for 5 minutes. And so what's great about the science is we've found that micro dosing or micro moments of mindfulness are actually equally effective. And that is very exciting news for parents who have actually felt like failures because they don't meditate. And we all know we're supposed to be mindful parents now.
Right.
So that being said, sigh and see together are really your mindfulness moment.
Okay.
So you're taking that sigh, that's your body regulation moment. If you're really worked up, sigh three times in a row, that really helps. And you'll notice yourself sort of sinking into your body. You often find your shoulders going down and your heart rate kind of calming. And you feel like you start to connect with yourself. Then see your child, see the situation, see their body language, see what's going on. But see is that simple moment of mindfulness because it allows us to approach the situation without reacting to the shoulds in our heads and without immediately trying to fix it. As you know, as a meditator, mindfulness is about accepting the present as it is. And I mean, accepting is a really hard word for Westerners because it doesn't mean it's not a direct translation of the original Buddhist concept, right? So it takes a little explanation. Mindful acceptance doesn't mean you say, oh, it's fine. Oh, my kid's shooting up heroin. That's perfect, right? No, that's not what we're saying. Some things are unacceptable, right? But what we're saying is, instead of immediately trying to change what's happening or trying to pretend it's not happening, I'm going to accept what I see in front of me. And again, seeing is about noticing. It's not really about visual sight. Some folks have visual impairments, and I don't mean to leave them out of this.
Sure.
It's just that it's an alliteration, so it makes it easier to remember.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I can't have this conversation with you, Dr. Escalante, today without touching on the subject of, you know, social media and the toxic culture that exists online, on YouTube, in the gaming community. I mean, there's so much there. So I want to ask you, in terms of that, which is a lot of pressures that teens are dealing with and Gen Z, how do you see your method contributing to a larger conversation about mental wellness for both parents and children?
That's a really interesting question. I think it's hard to answer without explaining the third step of the method. So if you wouldn't mind, is it okay if I explain that first?
Absolutely. Sai, see, let's go to start.
Yeah. Because what we do is, okay, great. Now we've moved a little out of our anxiety. We're engaging with the present, but we still as parents have to choose what we're going to do. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, if Johnny is hitting his sister on the head with a wiffle bat, you know, we may need to choose some kind of action.
Been there.
Right. And actually, to that point, folks who practice Sisi Start for a little while say it becomes so fast and second nature that it actually works in a crisis where you have to intervene immediately as well. And I'll explain that in a second. So once you sigh and you see, you gather the information, you connect, and you calm yourself down, then you're going to start. Sometimes start means thinking about what's appropriate here, thinking about what you've just noticed, and thinking about that parenting advice you have and seeing if it applies. Sometimes it's thinking about how you might do things differently than you've done before. Sometimes the best way to start is to do nothing at all.
Right.
I tend to be reactive. You know, my job is literally to fix things, right? So, I mean, I find that this is really important for me, that if I'm not quite sure what to do right now, just starting by doing nothing often gives my kids enough space so that they become less reactive. And in many cases, I've actually then had the opportunity to watch them solve the problem themselves because I didn't jump in right away. And sometimes that moment of space just gives you a little more time to, you know, gather information like, okay, not doing anything didn't help. Let's try something else.
Sure. That can be more effective.
Yeah. And sometimes we start something and it is effective and we say, great, I've learned. I'm going to file that away as a learning. And the more we have those successes, the more we feel that sense of skill and accomplishment. I did it. I didn't have to follow the shitstorm. I did it myself. And then sometimes we start something and it backfires. And we're like, whoa, I messed up. I should have done it differently. I'm a failure as a parent. But, you know, we know what to do if we feel a should. We sigh, see, and start again. So what I love is that sigh is, or start is where this method gets really different from other mindfulness techniques, because now we're basically doing a science experiment every time we interact with our kids. Mm-hmm. And when you approach it that way, in a science experiment, a failure is not a failure. It's like, it didn't work. Now we got information, right? And so suddenly our approach to mistakes is totally different. Right. As in the should storm, we're told you must not make a mistake. You will fail your child, la-di-da. But now we say, well, I tried something. It worked or it didn't. And it's not about being perfect. It's about gaining skill. It's about learning your child. And most importantly, that open and positive attitude is something you then model and pass on to your kid. If you are making mistakes and just learning from them, and using them as a tool, then your child has much more space to approach it that way themselves. And that's huge.
Yes. And it reminds me of, you know, I've been mentor helping kids, different organizations. And I've also been a coach to my kids, different teams. So like, that start right there that you're talking about, where you take a step back and you really assess the situation, sometimes saying nothing, doing nothing, provoking them to think further and solve it themselves, right? I think it just reminds me of what the greatest teachers that I've come across, as well as the coaches who coach children, that's what the great ones do, right? They're not reactive every time and telling them they should do this, should do that. And so, but I do love the sigh, see, start, because it's like chocolate, strawberry, vanilla. You don't have to remember a big, you know, workflow. So I think that our listeners are going to definitely benefit from that. But now hooking back into that question about social media. So let's go back to that real quick. How do you see the method contributing to that larger conversation about mental wellness? Because mental wellness and mental health, everything that we see going on in social media and TikTok and stuff like that is a really huge problem worldwide, really. And when I talk to most parents, Dr. Escalante, most parents are just like back to the beginning of our conversation. We were saying, well, parents sometimes don't have the time, right? Or they don't have the luxury that, let's say, I have to work from home and homeschool the kids. So, you know, if it's like electronics, for example, they may not have the time to, you know, oversee everything that is happening. And then they just say, you know what, forget it. Here's the tablet. Here's the smartphone. Download whatever you want. Just be safe. And I hope for the best, you know, but there's so much toxic stuff out there that contributes to deterioration of their mental wellness. So, you know, how it doesn't even have to be your method. I just would love to hear your opinion of what is going on and how parents can manage that whole situation online.
Well, there's so many questions here. When we talk about online, it's hard to even know where to get started. I've been writing articles about the science on this for years. And so I think where SciSee Start really helps here is, once you do it enough, it stops being a method and it actually starts being a mindset. And that mindset has certainly helped me as my kids, you know, because I developed this method and started using it when they were in elementary school.
Right.
You know, I was probably using it unconsciously when they were younger, right? But now, you know, I've got a middle schooler and a high schooler, and so our relationship to electronics is very different, especially because in our school district, the kids are given a Chromebook at se in second grade. You know, they have free access to YouTube, despite my repeated request to the district to cut that off.
That's crazy.
And so you know, you have to basically continue to do your best to know your children. And I want to be careful here because know your children is a common phrase in the should storm, right? You're supposed to, you know naturally know your children and know what's going on and be an expert on them. And if you somehow miss something, then you failed, right? Well, that's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about the CSIC start version of that, which is you're continually practicing this observation and openness and connection with them so that you continue to get to know them, if that makes sense.
It
And
does.
then I do, that being said, I would say I do have some particular opinions here, which is, okay, look, you could cut your kids off from YouTube. But if they're in public school, they're going to be hearing a lot of it and discussing it with friends anyway, right?
Right.
What I've chosen to do with my one son who's into YouTube, is have open conversations about it. And every day we spend about 20 minutes together watching YouTube. He likes to show me the stuff that he's watching on YouTube. So I watch it with him. And then and it's mostly cute dogs doing adorable stuff and people playing drum sets because he was really into playing the drums, right?
Nice.
But because we have that open conversation, I'm able to pick up occasionally he'll tell me that he saw something and he'll spout an opinion that I find concerning or questionable. And then I'm able to have a conversation with him about that. You know, well, hey, what do you think about that? I've heard the opposite, right? You know, or how could you verify whether that's true or not? You know, that's because he's older that I can use this kind of critical thinking teaching with him. I recently saw, oh, I can't remember who wrote this. I believe it was in The Atlantic, but her father used to ask her growing up, whenever she would give an opinion, as an adolescent, he would then say, "Great, now restate that with the most compelling argument from the other side." And
Wow.
I'm planning to start using that if I can
I
just
like that.
remember. I've had it on my list, but I can't remember. I keep forgetting to use it with my kids. But the idea is, it's always that question: do we shelter our kids from the culture, or do we teach them how to engage with the culture safely? And that decision point is going to be very individual. It's going to depend on the child. It's going to
Absolutely.
depend on the child's age. It could vary. You have four kids. You may make different decisions at different ages with each of your four kids. And
100%.
that would actually be successful, what we call responsive parenting, where you're really meeting that child's needs, right? My older son is the type where he tends to be a very critical thinker. So he's very unlikely to be taken in by misinformation because he thinks most people have dumb ideas anyway. I'm teasing. He's
Hey, right.
a freshman in high school. That's what he's like now, right?
Oh, wow.
But you know, but that's joking. This is a very common teenage boy thing stage that they go through, right? But the point is, you know, some people are more likely to believe everything they hear than others just by
Sure.
based on their personality. So knowing that difference can help you individualize. I do believe as a pediatrician in screen time limits for kids, and we do enforce them at home, and I do think that's what the science shows us. But the science also shows us that different kinds of screen time are better or worse. So it looks like video games aren't too bad. And some of them actually build certain types of skills. Social media is a real minefield, and can be quite negative for kids depending on how it's used. Instagram and Snapchat are absolutely horrible for girls' mental health. And that's like without a doubt scientifically backed. So I also think that it's helpful if you're able to have that information to individualize your limits on different things. So I believe they found with teenage girls a couple different studies that over 30 minutes a day of things like Snapchat and Instagram led to significantly higher rates of depression. Right. So, you know, I don't have a daughter, but if I did, I would have super strict limits on that. My boys could care less about that stuff, so I don't even have to argue with them about starting an Instagram account.
Right. Well,
So what does that help? Like, is
that
that,
does. That does. And I love the perspective from someone who has been writing about this. And obviously I think your book really helps. And I agree with you. Every child's different. And again, my little PSA to our listeners, parents who are struggling with it, I think it's like you said, have those open conversations with your kids, but also really teach them that the two largest contributors or entities who control all of this are the tech companies and their shareholders and the government. And what they've shown us in the last, decade plus is that they don't care about your information, your data at all. And so for my kids, all that you said, I do that. But then I, with my older ones, I go a little bit further and try to really explain to them, like, these companies don't care about you. They care about profits and monetization, right? And so misinformation, as you were just alluding to, is a huge problem. And you're right, if someone is likely to be a conspiracy theorist, from a young age, then that's a problem. But I think educating them, and I love the example that you gave, Dr. Escalante, about that article where they said flip it and say, you know what? So you just saw this on social media. Make the argument for for the other side. I really like that. That's a great way to do it. So appreciate your
I
thoughts.
just,
Absolutely.
yeah, I actually just wrote down what you just said because I haven't had that conversation with my kids yet about how social media is driven by companies and it's driven by profits and it's designed to keep you on. And I think I need to have that conversation with them. So thank you.
Well,
It's on the
so
list, you
yeah,
know?
and so I geek out. I've been geeking out for years. I mean, really, on Section 230. Actually, since 2010, really, I followed it because in my industry of marketing and affiliate world, it's a huge deal. Data and privacy of consumers, right? And I try to give the kids the example that, like, even companies like Experian, they're a company that they hold all our credit information, right? One of the major credit bureaus, they are happy to share our data, over 1,000 points of data, with any marketing company that wants to target you. Facebook, all the other ones do the same. And so I try to explain to parents is like, know that everyone sitting there in Congress and the Senate, and I mean, pretty much all around across government, they know very little about how the technology works. And so these hearings go on, and I'll listen to these hearings for hours, they're grilling the CEOs of companies that are not being truthful with them. Again, their goal is to drive profits for shareholders at the expense of who cares, kids, parents, society. And so it's not a scare or a fear thing. Like I tell my kids, it's not. It's about being educated, right? It's about knowing your rights. And the problem is that there's a surveillance state that you deal with when you go online or use your smartphone. So knowing, let's say, how to use a VPN is important. Knowing which browser to use, like don't use Chrome because Chrome will record every action you take, right? Know that the microphones, the camera settings, I mean, they're all, it's a lot of surveillance. And so I think that for anybody who values privacy, and kids do too, right? Having that conversation, which is a little bit dry, I understand, can be really, really helpful. And then I think I paired that with everything that you said, which is just amazing wisdom and all the expertise that you shared with us, Dr. Escalante. I think any parent will be interested in learning more about Psy, C, and START. And I really want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us and share with us a new way that seems pretty straightforward. To me, it seems innovative. I mean, simple but innovative approach to parenting and really navigating all the pressures of the modern world. So thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Well, thank you. You know, and I think, I just really appreciate being on, and I just want to encourage those parents who often get left out of the parenting discussion, because, you know, most parenting books come across like we have endless time of and energy, right, to apply these techniques, and it's always skewed as though you're in a happy, heterosexual, successful marriage, right? And, you know, Psy, C, START, the book, is a deeper dive than the TEDx talk, and it really, I hope, includes single moms who are working two jobs and struggling to make it all work, and parents who are sick. You know, I've been very ill with long COVID for 2 years now.
Oh, wow.
And have had to test out my method and see if it really actually works or not. During a time where I haven't been able to work, I haven't even been able to contribute around the house. You know, my husband does all the grocery shopping, cooking, cleaning, childcare, driving them around, as well as his job, because I'm too sick to do any of it. And like, how can you be an effective parent for your kids? How can you be the parent that they need, mm-hmm, if you're bedridden and can barely find words to speak, which I have been for months at a time? And the answer is, believe it or not, by using Psy, C, START, I was still able to be present with them. Mm-hmm. And it's been a very rich time in our lives together in a surprising way, even when it was incredibly hard. And, you know, in many cases, I was able to meet their emotional needs, even if I couldn't contribute to their physical ones. So just to encourage the parents that usually left out, that you are included in this book, and that I'm walking that walk.
Right. Well, our thoughts are definitely with you and your family, and we hope that you get better. And then to our listeners, be sure to check out Dr. Escalante's book, Psy, C, START, and then follow her journey on social media, and definitely check out the TED Talk. I definitely enjoyed it. So until next time, this is Alex signing off from the Dadpreneur Podcast.